Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlanka with another episode. And today I'm going to read words of Sri Aurobindo and the mother on the topic fear. It seems a timely subject in our times here. So let's see what Mother and Sri Aurobindo have to say. The first obstacle to growth is fear. So speaking on the three obstacles, which are fear, doubt, and skepticism, in reference to an aphorism of Sri Aurobindo, the mother said the following on the topic fear. Even though there are those whose destiny is certain, who are meant for realization, they have to struggle mightily, resolutely against this something which one seems to take in with the very air one breathes, fear, a dread of what may happen. And this is so stupid because in the final analysis, the destiny of each individual is the same. You're born, you live, more or less satisfactorily, and you die. And then you wait for a certain length of time, and again you are born, you live, more or less satisfactorily, and again you die, and so on, indefinitely, until you feel you have had enough of it. Well, fear of what? Fear of coming out of the rut? Fear of being free? Fear of no longer being a prisoner? And then, when you have enough courage to overcome this, when you can truly say, come what may, after all, there's not much to lose, then you become wary and you wonder if it is reasonable, if it's true, if all that is not an illusion, if you are not just imagining things, if there's really any substance to it. And mind you, this mistrust seems stupid because you encounter it even in the most intelligent, even in those who have repeatedly had conclusive experiences. Why, it's something that you take in with the food you eat, the very air you breathe, your contacts with others. But remember that fear is always a very bad advisor. Sri Aurobindo says that fear creates imaginary terrors. Even if there is real danger, fear doesn't help. It clouds the intelligence. It takes away presence of mind and prevents one seeing the right thing to do. Now, there is no fear in the higher nature. Fear is a creation of the vital plane, an instinct of the ignorance, a sense of danger with a violent vital reaction that replaces and usually prevents or distorts the intelligence of things. It might also be considered as an invention of the hostile forces. Fear and anxiety are perverse forms of will. What thou fearest and ponderest over, striking that note repeatedly in thy mind, thou helpest to bring about. For if thy will above the surface of waking repels a thing, it is yet what thy mind underneath is all along willing. And the subconscious mind is mightier, wider, better equipped to fulfill than thy waking force and intellect. But the spirit is stronger than both together. From fear and hope, take refuge in the grandiose calm and careless mastery of the spirit. Well, the question is, why does one feel afraid? I suppose it's because one is egoistic. There are three reasons. First, an excessive concern about one's security. Next, what one does not know always gives an uneasy feeling, which is translated in the consciousness by fear. And above all, one doesn't have the habit of a spontaneous trust in the divine. Now, if you look into things sufficiently deeply, this is the true reason. There are people who do not even know that that exists. But one could tell them, in other words, have faith in your destiny. Know something about the grace. You may put it as you like, but the root of the matter is a lack of trust. If one always had the feeling that it is the best that happens in all circumstances, one would not be afraid. Well, it is the best, given the state of the world. It is not an absolute best. There are two things. In a total and absolute way, at each moment, it's the best possible for the divine goal of the whole. And for one who is consciously connected with the divine will, it is the most favorable for his own divine realization. For the whole, it is always, at every moment, what is most favorable for the divine evolution. And for the elements consciously linked with the divine, it's the best for the perfection of their union. Only you must not forget that it is constantly changing. It's not a static best. It is a best which is preserved, which, if preserved, would not be the best a moment later, as things are constantly changing. And it is because the human consciousness always has the tendency to preserve statically what it finds good or considers good, that it realizes that it is unseizable. And it is this effort to preserve, to keep things static, which falsifies things. Fear is a phenomenon of unconsciousness. It is a kind of anguish that comes from ignorance. One does not know the nature of a thing, does not know its effect or what will happen, does not know the consequences of one's acts. One does not know so many things. And this ignorance, this not knowing, brings fear. One fears what one does not know. Take a child. If it is brought before someone it does not know, now I am not speaking of a child with an awakened inner consciousness, I am speaking of an ordinary child. You bring this child before someone it does not know, its first movement will always be one of fear. Only very rare children, and they have another consciousness, are very bold. It may also be a mixture of apprehension, a kind of instinct. For when one instinctively feels that a thing is dangerous and hasn't the means to remedy it, when one does not know what to do to protect himself from it, then of course he's afraid. There are, I believe, countless reasons for fear, but in every case it is a movement of unconsciousness. That which knows has no fear. That which is perfectly awake, which is fully conscious, and which knows, has no fear. It's always something dark that is afraid. When fear comes, if one succeeds in putting upon it consciousness, knowledge, force, light, one can always cure it altogether. There is indeed the Christian religion which says that fear comes of our having eaten the apple in the Garden of Eden. That with knowledge came fear. And upon earth it is always this fear which governs all life for all human beings. Only here again I repeat my argument that animals also have fear. Now, animals have not sinned, have not eaten any apple, so they shouldn't have any fear. It is a sort of half-consciousness mixed with a sort of ignorant instinct which stresses a danger, and at the same time does not know its remedy. But certainly, the fact is that the adverse beings, beings of the vital world who fight against the divine work, make an extensive use of fear. It is through fear that they have the strongest hold on human beings. Besides, they are not the only ones. There are also all the political and religious means which are of that same type. There are religions which found their power over the believers simply through the fear of death and of what will happen thereafter, and of all catastrophes which await you after death if you do not blindly obey the laws they dictate to you. Now, this fear may also come from an antipathy, that is, a lack of affinity with something. Some people are especially afraid of fire. Some especially fear water. Others have a special fear of one animal or another. It comes from a disharmony between the vital vibrations. And then it is translated in this body unconsciousness by fear. The body is a terribly unconscious thing. How one has to work to give it just a very little consciousness. The body lives automatically by habit. It is terribly unconscious. The first movement of fear comes automatically. There was a great scientist who was also a great psychologist who had developed his inner consciousness but wanted to test it. He undertook an experiment. He wanted to know if, by means of consciousness, one could control the reflex actions of the body. Probably he didn't go far enough to be able to do it, for it can be done, but in any case, for him, it was still impossible. Well, he went to a zoo, a zoological garden, to the place where snakes were kept in a glass cage. There was a particularly aggressive cobra there, and when it was not asleep, it was almost always in a fury. For through the glass it could see people, and that irritated it terribly. Our scientist, wanting to make his experiment, went and stood in front of the cage of the cobra. Now, he knew very well that that cage was made in such a way that the snake could never break the glass and that he ran no risk of being attacked. He began to excite the snake by shouts and gestures. The cobra, furious, hurled itself against the glass, and every time it did so, the scientist closed his eyes. The psychologist told himself, "But look here, I know that this snake cannot pass through the glass. Why do I close my eyes?" Well, one must recognize that it is difficult to conquer reaction. It is a sense of protection, and if one feels that one cannot protect oneself, one is afraid. But the movement of fear which is expressed by the eyes fluttering is not a mental or a vital fear. It is a fear in the cells of the body. For it has not been impressed upon them that there is no danger, and they do not know how to resist. It's because one has not done the yoga, you see. With yoga, one can watch with open eyes. One would not close them. But one would not close them because one calls upon something else. And that something else is the sense of the divine presence in oneself, which is stronger than everything. There are many ways of curing oneself of fear. But in reality, everyone finds his own way, a way that is good for him. There are some people to whom you have simply to say, "Your fear is a weakness," and they would immediately find the means to look at it with contempt, for they have a horror of being called weak. There are others, you might say, "Fear is a suggestion from hostile forces. Push it away." And this is very effective. For each one, it's different. But first of all, you must know that fear is a very bad thing, very bad. It is a dissolvent like an acid. If you put a drop of it on something, it eats into the substance. So the first step is not to admit the possibility of fear. Yes, that's the first step. I knew people who used to boast about their fear. These types are incurable. That is, quite good-naturedly, they would say, just imagine, I was so frightened. And then what? Well, it is nothing to be proud of. With such people, you can do nothing. However, when once you recognize that fear is neither good nor favorable, nor noble nor worthy of a consciousness a little enlightened, you begin to fight against it. And I say one man's way is not another's. One must find his own way. It depends on each one. And fear is also a terribly contagious collective thing. Contagious, it is much more catching than the most contagious of illnesses. You breathe an atmosphere of fear, and instantly you feel frightened, without even knowing why or how, nothing, simply because there was an atmosphere of fear. A panic at an accident is nothing but an atmosphere of fear spreading round over everybody. It is quite curable. There have been numerous cases of a panic being stopped outright simply because some people refused the suggestion and could counteract it with an opposite suggestion. Now, for mystics, of course, the best cure is, as soon as one begins to feel afraid of something, is simply to think of the divine, and then snuggle in his arms or at his feet and leave him entirely responsible for everything that happens within, outside, everywhere. And immediately the fear disappears. That's the cure for the mystic. It's the easiest of all. But everyone does not enjoy the grace of being a mystic. Now, when one feels frightened, there are many ways of curing oneself of the fear. If you have some contact with your psychic being, you must call it immediately, and in the psychic light, put things back in order. This is the most powerful way. Now, when one does not have this psychic contact, but is still a reasonable being, that is, when one has a free movement of the reasoning mind, one can use it to reason with, to speak to oneself as one would to a child, explaining that the fear is a bad thing in itself, and even if there is a danger, to face the danger with fear is the greatest stupidity. If there is a real danger, it is only with the power of courage that you have a chance of coming out of it. If you have the least fear, you're done for. So, with that kind of reasoning, manage to convince the part that fears that it must stop being afraid. Now, if you have faith, if you are consecrated to the divine, There's a very simple way. You say, Lord, let your will be done. Nothing can frighten me because it is you who are guiding my life. I belong to you, and you are guiding my life. That acts immediately. Of all the means, this is the most effective. Indeed, it is. One must be truly consecrated to the divine. If one has that, it acts immediately. All fear vanishes immediately like a dream. And the being with the bad influence also disappears like a dream along with the fear. You'll see it running away at full speed. Now, there are people having a strong vital power in them, and they are fighters, warriors, who immediately lift up their heads and say, Ah, an enemy is here. We are going to knock him down. But for that, one must have the knowledge and a very great vital power. One must be vitally a giant. That does not happen to everyone. So, there are many different ways. They are all good if you know how to make use of the one that suits your own nature. We'll pause here for today. And hopefully keep in mind that entertaining fear is a very, very bad thing, says the mother. Thank you for listening. We'll meet again next week with another episode.
This is Oroville Radio, Voices from the City of Dome.